You're listening to Rotary Radio UK and the second part of our interview with Hugo Pike of Water Survival Box. And we're picking up the narrative exactly at the point where we left it in part one.
How do you ensure that the boxes are getting to the right people?
Right. Well, we realised from day one that we couldn't afford, and it wouldn't necessarily have been a sensible way forward, to try and organise to delivery ourselves. We weren't going to fly out with them. Where would we go and how would we operate when we got there? So we latched onto the idea from almost immediately that we needed to work with recognised international NGOs. Rotary in some places, although it's not our preferred option, simply because Rotarians are very enthusiastic amateurs. And what we need in this situation is expertise and people who are used to living out of a tent with a box like that to survive themselves in effectively a war zone or a disaster area. And they've got to be able to do that and still do the job we want them to do. So for that reason, primarily, we'll deal with the local national or international Red Cross societies. We deal with, have dealt with Oxfam in the past. Occasionally we work with Shelterbox in the early days, but that was way back when, and they've gone their own separate way since then. Currently, we're working with CASA Aid, a Sikh organization based in Slough, but they operate primarily in the Indian subcontinent and out in Southeast Asia. We work with Humanity First, which is, they say they're multinational and everything else, but they actually have a strong contingent who have a Muslim background, and we work with them, Humanity First UK. We have worked through them also, for example, in 2013 in the Typhoon Haiyan out in the Philippines with Humanity First Canada, because Canada for Humanity First operates in that neck of the woods. They cover that side of it. So it rather depends who else, but in the most recent years, and at a time when Rotary in the Caribbean said we don't need any help following disaster out in the Bahamas, and I could see on the internet that there was help still needed, and I found an organization called the International Medical Corps. It's an enormous American-based NGO, and I got in touch with them and said, look, I've read your latest report on the internet. I've seen what seems to be the need. This is what we do. Here's a copy of our schedule of, you know, this is what the box looks like. Here's a list of the contents. If you think you need it, and primarily it's about clean water, we can supply whatever, 200 boxes at the time. And they came straight back and said, yes, please. That was our first foot in the door with IMC, and we've been working with them ever since in various places out in the Far East, Puerto Rico, and so on and so forth. And even in Ukraine, although we'll come on to Ukraine in a minute.
Okay, sounds as if you've got yourself a full-time job now.
Yeah, it does sound like that, doesn't it? Actually, that became a problem. Well, partly because my wife was going through ill health issues. She went downhill with dementia for some years, and I was looking after her at home, managed to keep her here until she did die. But so that put the pressure on, and it meant that I had to start to realize that what had largely grown like topsy, and that you'd sort of started to just absorb a bit more and a bit more and a bit more, needed to be disaggregated. And so at a team meeting, we meet once a month as trustees anyway to manage the whole process. But back about probably 6-7 years ago now, I said, well, I need to step back from this a bit. And Tony Quinn, a former district governor of ours, a member of my club as well, he was already part of the team, and he took on the chairmanship. I looked after the operational side of it at that time. Since then, he's taken that role on. We've appointed somebody else as chairman, and we have this idea that we need to have a succession plan to ensure that the whole thing can continue into the foreseeable future.
And it's still everybody is volunteering.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The thing that has changed is that instead of them all coming from our club, We've now embraced three other local clubs. And as I say, Dot Cretney from the Froome Club, who's an assistant governor, is our lady representative who keeps a weather eye on us and largely organises our packing sessions for us as well.
Yeah. Okay. So people listening to this now and thinking, I'd really like to get involved or I'd really like to help, how can they do that?
Well, obviously, there's always a need for the money. And that's easy, can be done. I mean, as we are speaking now, there is an annual opportunity to double your money. And we have, for some years, we've had an online donation site through The Big Give. One of the big, it's a charity in its own right, but it offers other charities like ours the opportunity to raise money through them. At Christmas time each year, or in the run-up to Christmas, they have their Christmas challenge. And we participate in that for as many years as I can remember now, probably at least the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And on some rare occasions, they run a special appeal for a major disaster, and we've benefited from that. But every year at Christmas time, or in the run-up to Christmas, there's a two-phase process. Pledges can be made. People don't have to part with the money straight away. They make a pledge now to be paid sometime from mid-December on. I think it's a two-week window after that. And that is a target. We have a target this year of 11,250. We got pledges up to that level. Come the 28th of November, which is actually next Tuesday at midday, it's just coincidental as we're talking, there's the opportunity for individuals or clubs to donate, but it has to be done online, and it has to be done between midday on the 28th of November, and I think it's midday on the 7th of December. It's a full week when opportunities, obviously, because it's online, it can be any time of day or night after midday in that period. And what we're aiming to achieve there is to get 11,250 in donations online. And when we do, or as we do, we subsequently will be able to draw down the pledges. And I have to say, that's almost all Rotary or individual Rotarians. And there are some Rotarians who so like this project that over and above their club helping, they also do things independently and go online. But
okay.
The only obstacle for some clubs is say, well, we don't have an online facility. Well, they overcome that by themselves getting one of their members to donate online, and the actual cost is then reimbursed to the individual. So that's the way it can work.
So the sum of 11,250, how does that translate into survival box or water survival box?
Well, you're looking at 22,500, obviously, is the end figure as we achieve that. And I haven't done the calculation now, but if you divide by 150 quid, that's basically the number. 100 boxes is 15,000. 30,000 equals 200 boxes. And that is still a relatively small proportion of what we're going to be sending out in a typical year. Up until the beginning of last year, 22, we would have been processing about 1,200 boxes a year as an average. That's gone through the roof. Ukraine has absorbed probably more than that on its own. We've sent 10 consignments out to Ukraine in the past year and 9 months since it all kicked off. And we've responded to other disasters more than once. Syria and Turkey in the last few months. Morocco is waiting to go. We're only waiting for the green light from the airline who's going to take it in for us. And we get help in that way because Airlink, a US-based charity, will take stuff for us at no cost to us, which saves a lot of money, enables us to do more boxes. So that's primarily, but occasionally you get individuals who turn up out of the blue. We had a classic case going back a few years now. Two of us were playing our Wednesday golf game, and we had a call from the office. When I say the office, there is a company that we have to rent space from, a warehousing unit. And one of the girls in the office acts, or did act, and then and still does, as our sort of point of contact when we're not there. She took a call from somebody who said, I'm on my way out from Cornwall. I want to call in and visit 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I want to see somebody about the What Survivors project. So we got told about that. We downed tools at the golf club, got there in time to grab a sandwich and a coffee, in time for the arrival of this, what turned out to be a husband and wife team, in a soft top sports car with their golf kit poking out the back. They came in, we gave them a 1 hour a briefing, handed them some literature, and told them all about it. And the guy said, right, okay, get your checkbook out, to his wife. She got the checkbook out and he wrote a check for £12,500. And he knew about us through a Rotary member who was involved with him as, I think, treasurer of a trust based on the Isle of Man. Now, who would have known? You get wonderful surprises like that. But probably the best of all is this connection with Switzerland and the very fact that they continue to support us to the tune of 100%, or as they have done for Turkey and Syria, because they raised so much money and appeal specifically for that, they said, we will cover that 100% until we run out of money that was dedicated for that purpose. The other thing to say is that whilst our aim primarily is to respond to natural and man-made disasters, all sorts of things from earthquakes, typhoons, cyclones, and so on, floods tend to predominate a great deal, and with climate change, that's growing all the time. And also, sadly, civil conflict, or to put it more bluntly, war. And currently, there's a war going on out in Sudan. We've responded to that. The situation in Syria is ongoing. We're responding to that many times now. The Yemen we responded to as well. And Ukraine, as I say, 10 times in the last 18 months. So there's a lot of work going on, and all of it only because Rotary is supporting us. And that's where it is, really.
So if people want to get in contact with you, how do they do that?
Okay, well, the website, very simple, www.watersurvivalbox.org. So that's all one, as if all like one word, if you like.
Yeah.
Well, people can also get hold of me or other members of our team. Certainly put the individual's name, Hugo in my case, at. And of course, there's a phone number, and we're always happy to take calls and help people understand what we do.
Hugo, thank you very much. It's been a very interesting talk. I wish you every success, and please get in touch with Rotary Radio if you're putting out appeals or anything of that nature. And we're always very happy to broadcast them. Thank you very much for your time today.
This has been a podcast on Rotary Radio UK with Hugo Pike of Water Survival Box. And as at the end of part one, we're playing out with a landslide by one of our favourite jazz singers on this station, Stacey Kent.
I took my love, I took it.